Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dialysis
yes.
Advocates. Okay, you want to go ahead, you're better.
I'm sorry, Darlene. I was on
go
mute
on.
And I did not know it. Good evening, everybody. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette. This is TS Radio Network, and our show tonight is Dialysis Advocates with Arlene Mullen and her co-host, Greg Coleman. Her guest is Shanice Figaro, and all these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. Arlene will be there this year with a panel, as will I. We hope you'll tune in. We hope you'll show up at the summit. We need your support. With that, I'm going to turn you over to your host. Go ahead, Arlene.
Okay. Thank you, Marty, and thank you, Marcel, for having us. Giving us this opportunity to be, you know, on your radio program. Shanice is
yes.
a patient, and I'm going to ask you some questions. So how long have you been on dialysis, and when did you start your treatment?
Yeah, well, I have been on dialysis now since 13 years old. I'm 33 now, and I've had two kidney transplants, and they only lasted a year and a half each. So I've basically been on dialysis the majority of the time. I got 2 years, 2.5 years off dialysis. So all this time I've been 11 years straight on dialysis, chemo.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And at what time were you notified and understand that your life would be different? And what was in store for you? Or
like
did you just... Pardon?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of the other patients, it was an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
It's always given to us as an emergency, I realize, not just my own case, but other cases, as if we have to start the minute that we find out. It was an emergency for me, and I had to start that night. I was rushed into dialysis the night I found out my kidneys were completely gone.
Oh, wow. And what is the name of your condition, and how does it affect your kidneys? What took your kidneys out?
Oh, my condition is called FSGS. It's focal segmental glomerular sclerosis. And this condition, what it does is it scars the kidneys when you urinate. Every time you go to urinate, it scars
mm-hmm.
the kidneys over and over till they fail. They're damaged. It's a reoccurring disease, so it shows up in the transplant. Usually people with FSGS spend a lifetime on dialysis.
Even with the transplants?
Even with the transplant, it's a reoccurring condition that they try to control with a whole other machine called plasmapheresis.
Mm-hmm.
It's like dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
It involves the blood, but instead of taking out fluid, they're adding the protein that you're spilling because of the disease. But
right. I used to work in plasmapheresis, so they give you back your cells, your red blood cells. What form of dialysis are you receiving now, and do you find it effective for a person with kidney failure? what is your mode of dialysis right now?
My mode and my choice,
mm-hmm.
and given the other choices, is hemodialysis. It has sustained me for 11 years straight and since 13, you know, when I started. It has allowed me to live. It's very effective.
So are you on hemodialysis?
I'm on hemodialysis.
Okay, do you do home hemo, or are you in a clinic?
In-clinic dialysis, hemodialysis, and I'm switching mm-hmm. over to PD in the next couple weeks. So
okay, that'll free
that
you up, yeah. Well, that should be, you know, work. And then on your kidney, are you on the kidney transplant list? And have you received, you said, 2 kidneys already?
I got 1 transplant from my mom in 2000, mm-hmm. 6 months after I found out I had kidney disease. It only lasted 1.5 years because they didn't know I had FSGS. It only mm-hmm. was discovered when they biopsied the transplanted kidney. Oh, this is what you have. So the next transplant was a cadaver from an 11-year-old that got into a car accident. We thought I would have it for a majority of my life, but it lasted 1.5 years.
Do they know why?
Not even my condition. It was actually the BK virus, which my friend is battling right now with his transplant in the hospital. There are different factors besides your own disease that could complicate a kidney transplant. The BK virus, every human being is born with it. It lies dormant until your body is ingesting so many immunosuppressive medications. It allows it to come out. So it's not one thing, it's another.
Oh, right. Shanice, and medications can go on, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to ask, when you talk about immunosuppressants, are you talking about antibiotics?
No, immunosuppressive medication, not for infection, but to bring down your immune system so your body doesn't attack the organ. And
I see.
There's a
I understand. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So it's kind of like lupus in a way?
Because
lupus is an auto.
Your body's fighting it. Your body's doing what it's supposed to do, basically. But it's hurting you because the organ is not your organ. Oh, no, this isn't my organ. It's fighting it.
Wow.
Yep.
Medications can account on diet. Can that make a difference or difficult for dialysis patient? What is your diet?
Oh. And you know what's funny? My boyfriend calls it a livid, and he calls it the livalysis. And a livid, because I'm eating good so I can live. I'm doing this treatment so I can live. So he calls it livalysis. And I love that phrase.
Oh, that is a good phrase. I've never heard that before, but that really says a lot. Have you had problems following the renal diet? Restrictions, medication schedules?
Yeah, I've had a lot of problems with the food because...
Mm-hmm.
Because of the dialysis, a lot of kidney patients are on certain budgets. So they're actually living off of the same amount of money that they have to buy food with, healthy food, too. And it's more expensive. So I see myself going for the more cheaper, faster, convenient items. That's not good for me. I've seen myself doing that a lot.
Yeah, I can.
And I know a lot of other patients are doing it, too, because they don't have access to hot, home-cooked meals, fresh, all the time, without so much preservatives and sodium in it.
Oh, yeah. Sodium and potassium, I know, are a big no-no. How many times have you been admitted in the hospital due to lack of treatment? Access issues, higher your blood pressure, and dialysis issues over the past 2 years alone.
A lot. a lot. It is actually like dodging a bullet if I'm out for more than 3 months, 4 months. Oh, my God, I'm doing good. That's the life of a dialysis patient. I am doing good if I'm out for more than 4 months. There is always a complication. If your blood pressure is a little too low at the end of the night after dialysis, they will ship you in an ambulance to the hospital because they don't have time to wait around with you. I have a family to get home to. Well, they'll just send you to the hospital, let them deal with you. That's the life of a dialysis patient. I'm in and out of the hospital for little things that they don't want to become big.
Yeah.
A lot. I've been in and out of the hospital the last 2 years more than 15 times. And planning to go back for more procedures.
So, why is it? What's the main reason?
Reoccurring
you in the hospital.
Reoccurring hospital visits. Reoccurring hospital visits due to lack of blood in my body, low blood. A lot of dialysis patients have anemia, low blood, so sometimes I feel dizzy. And it's an on and off. It's not every month that I feel like this. Next month, my blood levels may be better, and I don't feel so faint. Every day is a fight to stand up.
How does that affect your relationships?
The spirit that I have doesn't hold me back. I have a very, very compassionate boyfriend, and that's so understanding and so godly. And he's not just in love with my body and my, he's in love with my spirit. That's the connection. And he's there for me. You know, he'll lay in the hospital bed. He'll do whatever it takes that I would fight.
Wow, and that's nice.
Everybody to allow, not for you to love, because we got a lot of love. You have to allow people to love you. I was afraid to let people in because of this condition. Such a strenuous situation that I didn't want to put on a partner. And I've allowed someone to love me, and he loves me so much. And I need the support.
Yeah, well, you're very fortunate that you, many people never experience that in a lifetime.
Yes.
How do you cope with this illness? And where's your happy place, and how do you get there?
My happy place. I paint. You know, when I was younger, my family would bring me a bunch of art materials, and my happy place was helping people. So I'd go from room to room, even if I had to put a mask on, to give out art supplies to the kids in bed, sick kids, or whoever could come out the bed into the room to hang out with me. I get them out with their IV poles, and they come color and create with me. Creating gives me self-worth. And I feel
So that is how you started your artwork then, correct?
Hospital.
Your love of art?
Yeah. My love of art. Up the walls and all of the doctors with one piece of my art in all their offices. Every floor I went to, somebody had a piece of my art. I felt, you know, as I got older and I went back to the children's hospital, and I see this old brown piece of art. They still have it.
Wow, that's neat.
My mark. Art allowed me to leave my mark on this world. I don't have any children. I paint buildings. I have 5 supermarkets that I've painted by myself. The whole sides of the supermarket. I'm leaving my mark as an artist. Whatever I can do in this condition,
Well, you've made a lot of awards, too. I've seen
yes.
some of it. It's beautiful. And to be awarded and on buildings, what started the buildings?
People buy my canvases for $100, $200. Mm-hmm. And I figure that one person has it in their house on the wall. I feel everyone should be allowed to experience that beauty. And I was awarded my first store last year. And the amount of attention the neighborhood got because of that store. The way I saw people pull over, jump out the car with their kids, come take a picture with the painter. They didn't know me. Nobody knew me. But they were just
wow.
so proud.
Mm-hmm.
I saw traffic behind me. I didn't know the kind of attention that was behind me because I just paint. I'm on the ladder. I have my spray paint. I'm in the zone. But when I realized the impact I could make, that was it. It's the feeling that I need.
And if you were given a wish, if you were given a wish, Shanice, what would it be?
If I was given a wish, what would it be? I believe that my condition shaped me into the person that I am now. You know, I visit
mm-hmm.
nursing homes and hospitals, and I help people of all ages. And I believe that it may be the person that I am. My wish is to be able to supply seniors with art. I want to be able to have a program that's not just a living community, but is a learning community. Because it doesn't matter what age, people are still people, still living human beings and still learning and still should be loved and cared for and growing. So I want to supply seniors with a living program.
So you go into nursing homes?
Yes.
Wow.
One of my friends, he was 92, who recently passed away. He was on dialysis, and I used to take him food and make sure I set my uncle up to take him to dialysis 3 days a week. Make sure my friend gets to dialysis, you know? I want to be the person, I want to be the big sister on dialysis. I want to look out for people. And the nurses walked this little old guy over to my chair. I was on the machine, and two nurses walked him over to me. He was 90, after time. And this is Shanice. I'm patient advocate. Unofficially, they bring all the patients to me. So I guess I am patient advocate. And they brought
him
over.
There you are.
And I had his back from that day that they brought this man over to me. And the love I felt for him. I want to be there for people.
Well, your artwork alone, I mean, it's going to live for a long time. And people enjoy the beauty of what you've created with your hands and your mind. I really enjoyed looking at those pictures. I'm going to have Greg on, and he has some questions, I'm sure, to ask you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Hi,
excuse
Greg.
Me. Let me clear my throat. Hi, Shanice. How you doing?
Hi. I'm hanging in there.
Pleased to meet you.
Happy to meet you, too.
I've been looking at a lot. I'm on your Facebook.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at a lot of your art, and I really like it, and it's very inspiring. And you're a very talented young lady, and you're a very special person. So how did you use...
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank
how
you so
did
much.
You take your pain and transform it into power, because you're a very powerful person, and I realize that dialysis, especially the form of kidney failure that you have, that you just described, robs you of power and makes you weak. But somehow or another, you've been able to rise above it. And I know that genuine love and support has to be one of the most important elements in your success.
Mm-hmm. You're so right.
Yeah,
you're
because
so
we
right.
need to. We need. We need other people's strength, because you cannot deal with this alone effectively.
Mm-mm. No.
And when you were describing your years, I was sitting here, and as Arlene says, they're advocates, but they're not patients. But I felt your pain.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really inspiring to see all of the things that you're doing. And what's next on the horizon for you, as far as, I know you're an advocate, and I know you cherish that role.
Yes,
I know you're trying to get something to market.
Oh, yes. Yep, it's my baby.
Can you describe that for me?
It's actually called the Arm Cozy. What the Arm Cozy is, it's an ergonomically designed support pillow configured expressively to support the human arm during intravenous treatment. Any and all intravenous treatments, such as dialysis, chemotherapy, getting blood, giving blood. You don't have to have a condition to use my pillow. Any form of intravenous treatment, any kind of IV, any needle, you can benefit from my product. It is basically a long pillow. My pillow is the bun. Your arm is the hot dog.
Got you. I'm seeing a picture of you with it.
The Arm Cozy?
Yes.
I'm
looking at it now. Wraps around your arm.
Oh, no. That wasn't the Arm Cozy. That was me exposing my fistula.
Oh, okay.
To the world. Because I was always so self-conscious about it. And that was me showing people why I need the product. So I just showed them my arm and what it looked like and why the product would be so beneficial to other human beings in my condition, So that was me sharing my arm with the world.
Got you.
And I had a great
when you said pillow, I'm like, well, that's an interesting design for a pillow.
Yeah, I don't have the pillow picture on there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a provisional patent on this product, but I don't have the patent because they wanted too much money. So I don't have pictures on the internet of the on-post itself.
Okay.
The description. You know, I was looking for help for years. I've been in and out of the hospital, other procedures due to the kidney disease, and I don't want to give up on my dream. The Arm Cozy is my dream, and I've had a number of investors. I've had to just give them their money back because they're trying to take over the product that's not even on market yet. They
right.
I'm a young girl, and I'm by myself. It seems like I don't have any management or people behind me, just an invention and a prototype. And a provisional patent. They're ready to just take it all.
Yeah.
$5,000, little girl. No.
And then they'll go on to make millions.
No, I'm going to hold on to it.
Okay. Please do.
Yeah.
Because one thing I learned as a dialysis patient, it almost seems like if you allow your dreams to die, you soon will follow. Because it's your dreams that keep you going.
Yes. I'm going to live for it, and I'm going to make it happen. I want it to have animal ears and faces on it for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I was 15 getting needles. At 15, I was receiving full-size needles.
Wow.
In the pediatric hospital, in the children's hospital, next to other kids that talked me into getting the needles. How long y'all been getting needles, you know?
Right.
And this is needed. My little friend that passed away in 92, he was the first one to have the arm cozy. And he used it at home and just had his arm on it and fall asleep with it on the couch. It's a very therapeutic comfort device. Being admitted in the hospital with IVs for days, in nursing homes with IVs, laying in bed, anyone can benefit from my product.
Okay, sounds great. And I hope you're able to get it to market without being ripped off, but I don't think you will be ripped off because you seem like you're already on top of that. So you know what these companies and these angel investors will try to do. They will take yours and make it theirs and just leave you completely out of the picture. And like I said, they'll give you $5,000 or whatever, mm-hmm. take your invention, and go on to make millions.
Yeah, because you can't afford to make something so simple, and they can do it overnight.
Right.
So, God's going to bless me with it. I'm going to produce it one day.
Yeah, don't give up.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
And also, your form, okay, your FSGS
yes.
condition, does that make you ineligible for a kidney transplant because of the constant repetitive damage that's done, or are you eligible, still eligible?
Believe it or not, the funny thing is, and people don't know, that's why education is the key. I'm number one on the transplant list. I am
okay.
first kidney. They have to search every state to find me a kidney if I'm on the transplant list.
Okay.
They have to put you first. It's easier to find someone else a kidney because it is so much harder to get a perfect match for you.
Mm-hmm.
And a strong kidney, they have to search every state. And they are allowed to put you at the top.
Oh, okay. That's a blessing.
It's funny that way. But I am currently not on the transplant list for 11 years. And I don't really tell people unless they ask. You guys ask. I'm not on the transplant list because something in me tells me God is going to bless me with a kidney. Somebody is going to help save my life.
Okay, I got you. Go with that. If you got that deep faith.
Yep, I had to let my body heal. I wasn't going to be, I'm not an animal or a machine. I'm not a robot. My body mentally and physically had to heal from 2 8-hour operations and the loss of those two kidneys.
Right.
It was a lot of mental healing I did these last couple years. Physically, I'm alive. I'm still standing. Come on. Let's do the operation. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. Mentally, this is a battle. Physically, my scars are all healed. All of them are healed. Mentally, we have to heal as people, as patients.
Well, one thing that I like that you said that bothers me with the dialysis industry is you just said I'm a person, I'm a human being. A lot of times they don't view you as such. They view you as a product or inventory or stock.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of Arlene's battle and also Marty's battle is to see that these corporations don't abuse people and take advantage of people who are already in pain and suffering and in fear. And, you know, it's just great to hear you rise above it all. It's great to know that you have a great support system, because without it, you would probably not be doing as well as you are under the circumstances. And it's great to hear you remind people publicly that you are a person and a human being first.
Yeah.
And foremost.
Above all. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm glad to hear you say that.
That's how I see everyone. I don't care about age. I see people as people. I see people as breathing, as hurting, as hungry, as cold. I see people. That's all I see. And that's why I love everyone. Their heart beating like mine. I see people.
Great. Well, yeah. Shanice, it's been a pleasure for me talking to you. So I want to let somebody else have the floor, and I'll be listening.
Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
You. Marty, do you have any questions?
I'm trying to be quiet and be nice.
No, please be noisy.
Don't do that.
Please be noisy.
No, I guess I'm curious. I want to go back to you talking about you have two people trying to take your patent. How did they become involved in it, Shanice?
No, they weren't trying to take my patent. They wanted to invest money in me, got me away from my family and friends that could hear our conversation. When I realized
uh-huh.
they wanted to be so secluded from anyone that I knew so they could talk me into signing something, one guy
yeah.
went to a restaurant and had a paper already written out. For 50
oh,
bad of future
that.
Sales.
Of future sales. I'm shocked. I'm shocked, I tell you. Oh, gee, many
I'm
Christmas.
Pretty... Yeah. So that scared yeah. me. I said, oh, my God, this grown man is really doing this to me. I can't believe
gee.
He's doing this right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they'll do anything. They smell money, honest to God. It's no holds barred. I've seen this in several other situations.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been on dialysis all these years and everything, and what, I guess I'm curious because I don't know that I know anyone personally on dialysis.
Yeah.
And how does it affect you on a day-to-day basis? How does this affect your life, Shanice? What you do, what you don't do, other than the dialysis itself. I understand that's quite the process. But when you're not doing that, are you able to live just regularly, or do you have complications? What comes of
not
that?
Not at all. I can't live regularly.
Listen to you.
Everyone believes, you're a normal. You're a normal person. Don't let them judge you. Don't let them, guess what? I need help.
Yeah.
Judge me. Please support me. I need a ride. I'm cold and I'm tired. You know what I'm saying? We have to
yeah.
be put in that situation, but we don't like to be singled out. Oh, make
right.
sure Niecy eats first. Everyone calls me Niecy. I'm Shanice. And they're like, make
yep.
sure Niecy eats first. Yep, I'm hungry. I don't mind eating first. Make sure there's no salt in that stuff. She can't have, thank you. We need to let people understand what we're going through so we don't end
mm-hmm.
up protect ourselves at all times. We have to protect ourselves at all times. I want to work.
And nobody's going to do it better than you.
No.
No. You
never.
Go.
There
and
you
I
are.
Do it better than us.
No,
I promote self-sufficiency. If I could have a class for dialysis patients, I would promote self-sufficiency. I feed everyone in the house. I take care of every garbage out, clean up, everything. You know why? Because given a chance
what?
To be on my own, I have to be able to survive.
There you
we
go.
We can't depend on people to sit there and spoon-feed us. Did you take your medicine? No, but I hope you know to take your medicine and what it's for. No
yeah.
one should know what your medicine is for. You crazy? You need to know
yeah.
what everything is for You don't just take the pill the doctor gave you. It's for blood sugar, and you don't even have diabetes. You know why? Because you're just taking it.
We run into this, Shanice, all the time. People handed medications, and many of the medications they're handed will tell you in the circulars it causes renal failure, and yet they're handed out like candy, and people do not question it. They'll take it,
exactly.
And then you find out, like you're talking about, you're on a blood pressure medication, and you don't even have a problem with blood pressure, but you're on the
My
medication.
My blood pressure is good. I had to stop taking the blood pressure pill.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's crazy.
Well, I have this theory in life. There's two ways I'm going to live to be 125. I'm going to stay away from men and doctors. And I figure doing that, and I'm it's most particularly male doctors. I'm no. And but don't you say nothing, Greg. And
men and doctors.
Yes, but I tell you, these days, and listening to all of this through these shows about what goes on in these clinics, I would think the people working there would be ashamed. And I run into this constantly. There seems to be this whole subset of human beings that will take these jobs in nursing homes and dialysis and wherever it is. And they have no sense of compassion or empathy or sympathy. And it's almost like they take great pleasure in causing pain, whether it's physical, psychological, whatever it is. I don't understand that. And to hear somebody like you come up and say, you know, the hell with y'all, because I'm going to do this. I like you. And I don't like to have Darlene.
Yeah.
I don't.
No, she doesn't like many people, Shanice, so she's the legend. You're talking to the legend.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what is the older guy. Now, I told you, my granddaughter, I had told her, don't ever let them put me in one of those nursing homes. Don't you do it. I said, if it gets to that point,
you
get me
whatever.
They would. And I said, you get me whatever I need, I'll take care of business. And she said, Nanny, I will take care of you. And I said, be careful what you promise, baby. I said, I'm going to get old, mean, and bitchy. And she turned around and looked at me serious as hell and said, Nanny, you already are. I thought, But, you know, you've got to have that fighting spirit. And this is what's going to keep you rolling. This is what's going to keep you going. This is what's going to keep you alive. Don't listen to negative talk. Don't let them talk to you negatively. Don't let them put those thoughts in your head. Your thoughts do have an adverse effect or a positive effect on your overall well-being. I don't allow doctors, the few times I see them, to say negative things to me. I'll stop them dead in their tracks. Don't allow people around you to do that. You stay positive at all times. Yes, there you go.
Implement fear.
Yes. Yes, they do. And it's almost like they can't stand it that you aren't shaking in fear. Because see, Greg, that's the thing. If they can make you fearful, they got you. They got you. Now they got you. So you never want to allow yourself to go into that state. If somebody tries to put you in the position of being fearful, you get up and be the thing they feared. That's been my philosophy in life. If you want to get crazy, I'll show you a version of crazy you never knew existed. And, you know, and that's just the way that is. Now I'm going to be quiet now, Arlene.
Well, actually, I'm enjoying listening to this. Absolutely. You're two kindred spirits. You guys are kindred spirits.
Well, and Shanice, how did you, like this little arm cozy thing you're talking about, and you say it can be used for so many different things, conditions and so on. What first prompted you? What gave you this idea?
My fistula, when I was young and I first had my fistula, which it actually stopped working 2 years ago, and I'm 33. So I got it when I was 15. I've had it for a long time. And my needles are on the bottom of my right arm, which they said no one should have put it in my right arm in the first place, but it's in my right arm, my dominant arm that I paint with. My future is over if they destroy this arm. I'm an artist.
Wow.
I need my right arm. They operated on it 4 times. All I saw was my future going down the drain. If I couldn't paint, I saw my future going down the drain.
Right.
In order to keep my arm comfortable during dialysis so it doesn't end up infiltrating or anything wrong, the arm posy came up.
Okay.
I started bringing my own pillows and a whole bed pillow and laying my arm in the middle of it and, like, folding it and keeping my arm in this one spot. I'm looking at everyone else down the line. Arm is just sitting there on a flat, hard, non-sterile surface, just laying there that someone else's arm was just laying on. Everyone needs a pillow for their arm like we need a pillow for our head. With needles in our arm, it should be cradled with love and care.
Yes.
That's why the arm should be. Comfort. Comfort improves coping. In order to cope with such a strenuous treatment, why can't we be comfortable? And that's all I'm asking.
Well,
and if I have to stand in needles, make me comfortable.
It seems like that would cut down on infiltrations, too.
Yes, on infiltration, it would increase blood flow. It'll keep it stable and give it support for optimal comfort.
Okay, what is infiltration? What does that mean?
Infiltration is where the needle actually punctures the vein and blood is allowed to spill out into the vessels, into your cells. So it's not in the vein anymore.
And your arm turns blue.
Your arm will blow up and it'll bleed.
Yeah. I'll share some pictures with you, Marty.
Okay. But none of these brilliant people at any of these clinics, it never occurred to them that they could lessen the load and, you know what I'm saying, reduce the amount of pain and the possibility of this infiltration. It just never occurred to them. See, my problem here is you're going to these clinics, it costs a fortune, and I'm not complaining. That is not a complaint. Don't take it that way.
Yeah.
But they're getting paid good money, and they didn't think of this, and here you are all these years on dialysis, and you came up with this on your own, and here you are at a place where this is their business. They should know. And this thing about putting your arm down while you're having this done on a hard surface, and is there any disinfecting done? Is there any...
They wipe everything down with the same bleach. If one person gets out the chair, some of them pee on themselves, some people wear diapers, they wipe everything with bleach, and you sit right in it. It's sometimes still wet.
Oh, jeez.
That's how fast they put another patient in the chair.
Yeah, Shanice, I was going to suggest that a good barrier, because there's a lot of infections in dialysis because of you're just – getting their assembly lines on, off, on, off, on, off, and they just give a fast little scrub, is to take a twin size sheet, one that you can bleach, a flat sheet, put that on your chairs. Chairs are not really cleaned.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a barrier. It's a barrier between you and the many people that have sat down there. And then you just bleach it, wash it, bleach it, and bring it back the next time. They used to do this for our patients, but it cost money. So anything that cost money went away. It's not about healthcare, it's about profit, period.
Exactly. And it's not, you know, like Marty said, you would think that the people in these clinics would have brought or thought of something like Shanice did, but here's the issue that is twofold. Number one, they don't care. That's not their goal. To make you healthy, comfortable, safe, your longevity. They really don't care about that. Your product,
that's
your
disgusting.
Inventory. Yeah, and
that
but
is,
it's true. And the other thing is, Shanice is a patient. And I have a saying that I tell people at the center that I go to and anybody else who's not a dialysis patient, when they start trying to tell me about dialysis, I always let them know that I make it a habit to not let non-dialysis patients tell me about dialysis.
There you go.
I don't want to hear it.
Oh, yeah?
There you go.
I don't
may
hear
have
it.
Questions. Yeah, I may have questions, but I would never presume to tell you anything about it, no matter how many questions I had.
Right.
But, you know, Greg, you find this in everything. People that have never been involved, you know,
mm-hmm.
on any level, presume to know what's best. I get emails all
true.
The time from people saying, you should be doing this and you should be doing that. You should be not always writing back and say, well, you think that's what should be done. Why aren't you doing it?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Why'd you send me a mail?
Well,
you know? Go ahead.
The thing is, you know, I'm a worker, a former worker who quit due to ethical and moral. So I know the worker's side of it, and I know how the game is played. And I've always said, I have the health. All us that are workers, we have the health to push this forward and fight the fight for the patients. But it really, and I cannot stress it enough, is going to take the patients, and they've lived through it. I cannot understand at all what it feels like. I remember one of the patients I had for a while, we went up to Medicare and we were meeting with everybody up in Medicare, and the patient said something to this day I still remember. It's like having the flu every day of your life. Another patient told me that I don't know when I'm going in Monday morning. Who's going to stick me? Have they hurt me before? Have they caused me harm before? So you get there. Am I right, guys? And then you feel like,
absolutely.
You know, who's going to do you? Then you go home Tuesday, you start to feel a little better. And then you start worrying about Wednesday. These patients, the majority of the patients are scared to death to complain for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're retaliated against.
Well, when I was in center, they are, and it's by design. It's not by accident. It is a system that is put into place in their training process to control you, oppress you, take away your identity, and make you think they're God. It's like we're your last.
Well, they control
hope.
You.
Right. It's
this
about
is,
control.
Am I wrong here, Arlene? Is this? This sounds like guardianship to me.
Well, the thing is, I talked to Adult Protective Services today. They quit calling the police, or at least for now, you know, to get rid of patients, because police respond to every disturbance at a private business. These places are not in hospitals; they're in strip malls, so they are a private business. I talked to Adult Protected Services today, their newest thing since they can't use the police anymore because there's lawsuits being filed of intimidation and harassment, a way to control the patients. I have been having a rash of Adult Protective Services. And the one that, I ask every patient that comes to us to advocate, I ask them, when did this start? Have you ever complained about care? Yes. Have you turned them into anybody? Yes. They're gone. In many of these clinics, they're gone. Now they call protective services, and I can't go into it because they have the conference tomorrow, but I tried to educate this Adult Protective Services.
I'll tell you,
worker.
This scares me to death. APS is pivotal in all that goes on in guardianship abuse. And yeah. these people are notorious for lying, for erecting fictitious reports, claiming they did interviews they never did, and their word is just taken right. as if it fell out of the mouth of God. And you cannot, mm-hmm. up against APS, produce any evidence that will refute anything they say, because where you're going to be is in an administrative tribunal. And in that tribunal,
right.
the law
does not apply.
I've been
in a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah.
No, because you have a
right.
magistrate, which isn't a judge.
No.
You have a social worker that is from the hospital or the state. And mm-hmm. you have a prosecutor that is the state.
Yes, and they're all working
you can't
being
win.
Paid by the same agency. So you can't, you're sunk before you go in there. This is why they've pulled APS into this. And you cannot.
Oh yeah.
We've dealt with them so many times. This is a rotten, low down outfit. It is absolutely. These people. They have a quota.
Right, and
bill
it's
mm-hmm.
right, and it's a rotten when the industry is using Adult Protective Service to get rid of patients and
yes.
to take away power of attorneys, and that is where the danger goes. Now.
Yes.
I can't really go into it because I have the meeting, but I'm going to say Fresenius invited the network, who this company, these patients had already contacted that did nothing, wrote them a letter and said they couldn't help them. They wanted them in the meeting. We said no. So we're having the Adult Protective Services because they have to talk to them, but in a meeting, is not appropriate because that's
no.
gang warfare.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That is exactly what it is. It's guerrilla warfare against the patients. And
right.
no, keep APS out at any cost. And they have a vested financial interest, not only on a personal level, because there again, this is one of the agencies getting paid. These are all executive branch agencies. In other words, they either are appointed by your governor or by the federal government, and they all work under what's called
right.
an umbrella agency in your state. So they're contracted to the federal government. And so what happens here is when you go in there, they've already decided before you ever walked in
right.
how this is going
right.
to come out. This is a bad deal. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. I wanted
well,
to tell
the
you,
point is,
he's
yeah.
dropped off and she hasn't come back on. So I did
okay.
want to let you know.
Yeah,
okay.
but the thing is that, you know, we are asking, I talked to the Adult Protective Services, but the fact was, is they send them to the patient's house. They're frantic about, they know they're being attacked. But, you know, we have a history with Fresenius. We have a history of police records. We have, they're the number one in patient dumpings. And God forbid, it looks like they're now going to Adult Protective Services to
mm-hmm.
with false accusation. And you have patients on here with a lot of things written in their charts that they have no idea that are there that character
right.
assassinate them. So we have
yep.
requested that when the Adult Protective Service talks to them privately, but bring in their records and let them go through their records and challenge what isn't true in those records. Because you've heard it yourself, Marty. We've had many patients on Fresenius, and this is a standard of care and abuse that they have adopted.
And I would find out, too, depending on the state you're in, there are some states that if APS comes to your door, you have the right to refuse to let them in. There's not many of them, but you have the right to refuse to let them in. And if they come to your door, the thing I would do immediately is call the police and ask for protection, because these people are not there for your good. They have no right to come in your house and do any kind of inspection or ask any kind of questions. You did not call them. And,
well, the thing is, too, Marty, go
ahead.
On, I'm sorry, and then it's
no,
my
go
turn.
Ahead.
I'm saying with this gentleman here, he got upset with me and, you know, he talked to me today and he goes, why did you tell them not to talk to me? They don't know who you are. And the minute you let them in your house, you're doing a house assessment.
Yes. And you have
and
no control
don't realize
over what
that.
They write. They and these
well,
people
yeah.
will write anything. They will write anything. You do not let them in your house and call the police and tell them you're being stalked by these people and you need protection.
Well, it's like I'm having them meet them away from the house. But the thing
yeah.
is, I think this will blow up in their face because we have enough evidence to prove.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't it strange they called Adult Protective Services after they turned them in to the state for
no,
the
not
Department
not at
of
all.
Health?
Not at all.
And isn't it surprising that they also called the network, which is the industry, as far as I'm concerned, they oversee themselves. They never helped this patient, but yet they are demanding that they be in this meeting.
It's getting bad
out there, and patients
yeah.
need to start speaking out safely.
Yes.
And it's going to be the patient stories that get this over the finish line. Greg,
okay.
what do you have to say?
You know how I feel about patient proactiveness. I don't like Marty, people like Marty, people like you, people like Ron Caesar, people like Chili Most. We're blessed to have y'all, and it's a pleasure to have you, and you're doing a great job for us. But like Shanice said, we need to actively participate in our own treatment. And,
yes.
you know, I'm big on cures. I'm big on stopping the dialysis industry from suppressing potential cures. I'm big on that because, to me, cure is the ultimate freedom besides
right.
death. You know, so,
yes.
yeah, I agree with everything you said. I just, it's like people in these industries really don't care about people. And I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying overall, the industry itself is corrupt, greedy, hateful, and they just don't care about people. And Marty was talking about conscious. I think I've been on dialysis over 16 years. I can count on, well, two hands, the number of people who I met that were genuinely concerned about patients, and the majority of those people who are concerned about patients, they get fired.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, this we've only got about a minute and a half here, and I wanted to say something real quick. I think this is an example. Dialysis and APS is also another standing example of what they called the Stanford experiment, where that college professor
yeah.
took a regular class, split it in two,
mm-hmm.
made one of them guards and one of them prisoners, and the personality
mm-hmm.
change in the people that were the guards was stunning. How vicious they became, how callous
and
they became.
A lot of people in that had breakdowns.
Yes,
the prisoners.
Yes.
They became prisoners,
yeah, so,
and the guards became
yes.
guards. Yeah, you're
right,
Marty.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is exactly the same thing that's happened psychologically. You have put these people in a position where they can say anything. That person they've said it about can't do anything about it. And you see this monster personality develop, this aggressor, this cold, compassionless individual standing there. And people like you, Arlene, who have morals and integrity, stand up and go, wait a minute, I can't be part of this. And you have to go. And but it's just, this is exactly what we're talking about. These people have been empowered far beyond what they should have been. We've got about 30 seconds here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. I want to thank Shanice for coming on and talking about her invention. You can get a live link to it right there on the show promo. And again, remind everyone that these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. We'll all be there. Greg, Arlene, thank you so much for tonight's show. It was good. And we'll
good night,
thank
everyone.
You.
Talk
uh-huh.
to you next
night.
Week, guys. Good night.
Bye now.
Bye.